Paul tells us in Romans 15:4 that everything that was written in the past was written to teach us. We wonder what God has to teach us on family living. I want to welcome Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology, and Eileen Bauer, guest lecturer, to join me, Larry Viverka, on Probe today.
Good to be here, Larry.
Thank you for inviting us, Larry.
In reviewing specifically what we can learn from this week, encompassing an interesting range of biblical passages, our lesson begins with a series of hortatory injunctions, such as honor your parents, don't commit adultery, be happy with the spouse you have, submit, love, respect, and above all, don't anger your children. From there, we move on to the story of Ruth as a coping model for difficult times. We review Solomon's wisdom statements in Proverbs and read the love poetry of the Song of Solomon. Finally, the metaphors of God as husband as well as mother, father are considered. I'm wondering if we can perhaps begin with the ending. The picture of God as a heavenly parent or as a delighted husband can be very reassuring one for some, especially for those whose experiences with parents and mates has been deep, rich, and personally satisfying. But, you know, that's not true for everyone. For some, those relationships have been hurtful and painful. I've had clients who find the whole image of Jesus coming into their hearts as repulsive and frightening. Are there any more useful ways of speaking of our relationship with God that doesn't evoke these feelings of pain and fear for some?
Well, I think it's wonderful that Scripture does use a number of models, and that's good because different models do speak to different people. And I you mentioned even as mother, but I think of when Jesus was there as he rode into Jerusalem, Passion Week, and he uses the metaphor even of a mother hen and the protectiveness that that shows. And for some, that may provide more comfort than some of the other models that we have.
Mm. You know, I've thought about this because, like you, Larry, I've had people come to me who are troubled by these models. But, and I want to say this very kindly and very gently, but it seems to me that in this world, everything is broken. And so it is often necessary for us to try and look beyond the brokenness to find something whole. In other words, what I'm saying is that if my relationship with my father is such that it has been destructive, I think I can look beyond it and kind of idealize what it should have been or what it could have been and build from that. I know I worked once with a man many years ago who, when I tried to describe the love of God to him, he drew a blank. Because he had been orphaned at a very young age, and he had grown up in an orphanage that had extremely harsh discipline. By the time he was 14 and 15, he was being hit with a baseball bat in order to keep him in line. And then when he was 16, he ran away. And as I talked to him about love, he drew a blank. He said, I've never been treated, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm. But I asked him finally, I said, well, is there anything in your life that you have been attached to and that you have stayed with and been loyal to and honorable to? And he looked at me and he said, yeah, he said, there is. He said, I had a car once that I owned for 13 years. And he said, when it broke down, I fixed it. And he went on this whole description of how through thick and thin he had been, you know, I don't know what word, loyal to his car. He had repaired it and so forth. And that became the avenue by which he first glimpsed what the love of God was like.
Mm.
See, and I think that all of life is broken. Sometimes we have to try and look beyond its brokenness to find something that does help us.
You know, last week we mentioned about family and the family of the church as well. And I think it would be wonderful if, you know, especially people who have been hurt in their family of origin could find people within the family of the church that are able to model and show what they have missed. And perhaps that can help fill that void as well.
Well, that's been the hope. And I know it was a very important experience for me as well, growing up in a home with a father who was very angry, which then shaped my particular understanding of God. And I thought God was someone who was very disapproving, who was looking for ways in which to punish me.
And often angry.
And often angry. That changed for me when I went to a summer camp, and young pastor in his first assignment from in ministry was my counselor. And my goodness, we tried and tested that man in every way we possibly thought we could. But he never, ever responded in anger to us. And I learned that that men can be very loving and accepting. And because he was a pastor, he gave me a very different picture of God.
Mm.
Oh, talking about the man's car, Dave, you remind me of my Jeep that still is with me after 36 years.
Oh, yeah. We're going to call that a modified form of love, though, Larry.
Yeah. Well, as I think of ever parting with that thing, it's a member of the family. I mean, yeah. It would be like a loss of a child.
You'd have to have a funeral.
Have a funeral for it. The hopefulness then does turn to the family of God, and this is one of the things and ways that I think church can help compensate for the experiences in which a person's experience of God has been in one's family of origin has been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also in this week, there's this whole concept of submission. Wives, submit to your husbands. Husbands, treat your wives as you treat your own bodies. Feed and clothe them. We've often asserted that Paul, and I suppose we might include Peter, are encouraging mutual submission. Well, what do you think they are saying, particularly in the context of a master-slave culture where male dominance was the order of the day? And how do we reconcile these injunctions with God's making male spousal responsibility part of the consequences of the entry into sin? I'm wondering what you do with that.
Well, perhaps we can jump in on the question of submission. I am persuaded a long time ago that the idea of mutual submission or the absence of arrogance is precisely what Scripture is calling for. I think when you go back to Eden and look at the ideal, Adam and Eve were there as companions and friends, and, you know, friendships do not accommodate subordinate and superior relationships. You are friends with the people who you perceive to be like you. And I think also if you recognize that human beings are all beings in their own right, with their own conscience, with their own mind, with their own set of beliefs, with their own sense of responsibility, that this whole idea of dominance is very strange. And I've never understood, you know, I have enough time running my own life. How do I have time to dominate and control the life of somebody else? I have time to be friends and so forth, but I don't see myself running all the nitty-gritty minutiae of somebody else's life. And you could say, well, that's a problem of my personality, but if that's a problem, I'm glad I have it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is unbecoming. I think that in the Christian community, we have got to get away from this subservient submission thing. It's very damaging. It destroys the identity of somebody else. It does not set up a dynamic of mutuality and friendship in marriage. And I at this point, think it's pretty disastrous.
I've really appreciated Pastor Carl Hafner's emphasis upon submission as a kind of selflessness, an ability to lose the focus on me first or my needs or whatever, and to see that as a mechanism for genuine caring and concern and really practicing the command of love in our relationships with each other.
We expect spouses to put up with stuff that our friends would never put up with, so why not treat a spouse like a friend?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we've learned that probably the primary ingredient in dealing with marital differences and the quality of the relationship and the strength of the relationship is based on the quality of friendship that exists between husband
mm-hmm.
and wife.
Mm-hmm.
People who are friends will get through all kinds of difficult things. I'm wondering what sorts of things you in your families have done to build in the goals that effectively provide opportunities to teach, to love one another, to build memories that help to tie you together. Do you have some of those things that have been very special in your family lives?
Well, we've taken our family camping and houseboating at Lake Powell for over 30 years now. And somebody said the family that camps together stays together, not always because they're having so much fun, but because they're fighting a common enemy, you know, the elements. and that has been a very bonding and positive experience for our family.
Yeah, in our household there have been some rituals. You know, as our children are now in their 20s, it's much harder to maintain those, but family vacations, and you know, we have lots of camping stories to tell, but also family worships, and we used to have some very pronounced bedtime rituals that we finally had to shorten up because they got to be too long.
Oh, yeah.
Those are wonderful, though.
Well, one of the things that was it has deeply rich memories for me is the way we end worship times together with the family loves, and neighbors who would come in or join us for worship would end up in this incredible pile of human life and love. And those memories are treasures. Mm-hmm. I want to thank my conversation partners, Dave Thomas and Eileen Bauer, and our production engineer, Susan Michael. This is Larry Viverka for Probe.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194 or email us at probe@wwc.edu. Thanks for listening. We'll be here next week at this time with Probe.